Longtime viewers of this channel and members of the Contextual Electronics course will know of my deep, abiding love for KiCad. And that's what we use in the course, and for a couple reasons. One, it's open source. Two, it's free, part of being open source. And I think it's really flexible, too. I think that that is one of the most exciting things about it, the fact that there is a community around it, building out additional extensions. We talk about that a little bit in this show with John Evans, who's one of the lead developers. Really exciting thing about the KiCad development team is that many of them are electronics designers themselves. And so they're thinking about people like me, like you, about how we might be wanting to use the program and all of the things that are affecting users on a daily basis. There is an upcoming version of KiCad happening, V6, that we talk about here in the show. John is kind enough to showcase some of the features, and we talk through how things are going to be changing in V6. I'm very excited for it personally. I think it continues to move KiCad along the path towards a more and more professional tool. I do use KiCad professionally in my consulting work, and I think it is a capable tool to do that sort of thing. So I hope you enjoy this episode with John Evans from the core development team of KiCad. If you haven't seen it, there's many other videos here on the channel about KiCad from KiCon. You can see John talking there as well. And I'm really looking forward to future developments of the platform. I'm here with John Evans, and today we're going to be talking about KiCad or KiCad, and we're going to also be talking about designing next versions of electronics using V6 and beyond. Welcome, John. How are you doing?
Hi, Chris. Great to be on the show. I'm doing well.
Yeah, it's good to have you here. There are so many exciting new things coming, and you had done a live stream along with the other developers back in, mid-2020 or so. Actually, no, probably late 2020, and you did so many great demos then. I really appreciated that. How long have you been working on the project?
Oh, I'm coming up on 5 years now of being involved in one way or another, and I've been sort of heavily involved in the core development since about when version 5 was released, and we started really working on version 6.
I have to wonder, like, is it super empowering to just be like, I really wish the CAD program would do this. Oh, I could just go do it. Is that like a regular basis for you? How does that work?
Oh yeah. That's actually how I got started. You know, my very first KiCad contribution was, I was using it for something, and I think it was in the board editor. I was just like, why can't I do this? And this in the case was making a layer like an arbitrary color. For those who've been using KiCad for a while, you might remember back in the day, you couldn't actually use any color. You could only use like a certain palette of colors because of the sort of the graphics technique that we were using, mixing colors together. There was only certain colors that worked. And I didn't really know about the technical background of that limitation. I just thought it was a limitation. I wanted to use a different color theme, and sort of started digging in, and quickly found out it was a more complicated problem than I thought, which is why no one had done it before. Yeah. But it was a great way to sort of learn about how the code worked, and that feeling of why doesn't it do this? So wait, maybe I can make it do that keeps coming back.
Empowering, and it's funny too, because I remember talking to some of the other developers at the conference back in 2019, and it was a pretty common story too, where it was like, oh yeah, I started digging in, like, how hard could this be? And then like the complexity of just like the years and years of like building a CAD program from scratch is pretty significant, it feels like.
Absolutely. I totally understand why some people's approach to that is, they see it and they run away and say, I'm gonna build my own CAD program. Because they don't want to take the time to learn the history of the code base. And, I think both approaches are valuable, but I really think, even though there's a lot of complexity and history in the KiCad code base, over the 3 decades it's been around, I think there's, a lot of value in that. It kind of, has grown with the users, and we've been, seeing over the years what people are doing with it and what people want to be able to do with it. And all of that is kind of encoded into where KiCad is today. And I think it's a great place to build on, even though it does take some barrier of entry to sort of figure it out.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah, it's not a quick, there's no quick start guide aside from, well, get it to build first. Mm-hmm. Although that's gotten a lot better. And another thing that's interesting to me is that like a lot of the, I think almost all the developers are like have electronics background or are practicing electronics designers, yourself included. I mean, you work at a fairly large, like, you know, electronics design group inside of a 3D printer company.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I lead the electronics team at Form Labs, and yeah, I think having input from various different corners of the electronics world, whether that's people working in industry like I do, whether it's people who are sort of focused on one particular part of electronics design, like people who do, you know, high speed layout or things like that, and also people who are, you know, not coming from a industry point of view, but are coming from a, you know, more personal project point of view. But one way or another, they're using the tool and they want to improve the tool that they use. I think that's obviously it helps to motivate people, but it also helps to have all these different use cases within the development team that we can discuss. It's not like building a product where the people who build the product are disconnected from the people who will use the product.
Right. If you or I were like designing a product for 100-year-old people, that would probably be a tough one to kind of dog food and try out, right? Because it's just like you don't have that experience. Versus in this case, it's like, yeah, people know what they want on a regular basis, or they're trying to fix something that annoys them personally. So that's a great use case. What is it like at Form Labs? I mean, big team, small team? I don't really
Yeah, I mean it's a little over 500 people in the whole company, so it's not a little startup, but it's also not super huge. And mm-hmm. in the electronics team, it's eight of us, so I think it's a good size. It's not small enough that everyone is burdened by having a million different things going on and no breathing room, but mm-hmm. also it's not a huge corporate culture where you have, different teams that aren't talking to each other or doing different kinds of electronics design or things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd imagine, I mean, Form Labs has been around for a while now too. So then you start to get into like sustaining engineering and just keeping products alive and manufacturable and just cranking out that next thing while you're also working.
Absolutely.
On the existing one that's making money, like you have to just keep things going.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it started out as just a Kickstarter project, and when you have that kind of thing, and you have everybody working on one product, and then the one product gets out there, and you have to see how people are using it and fixing it. That's a totally different atmosphere from where we are now, where there's feels more like an established company where we have as you said, sustaining engineering efforts, new R&D, product introduction, things like that.
Yeah. I mean, kind of parallels the KiCad development, right? I mean, there is this ongoing base of people that are using the stable, using the stuff that's already out there. But then there's people like you that are developing that next thing that's in the new code base, in version 6 or 5.99 until V6 is released. And so what is that new product introduction, that new product fanciness that's going to be coming in V6 that people should be excited about?
Oh, where to even start? I think V6 is probably the biggest KiCad release ever in terms of how much it changes and how much people will notice it having changed. Certainly in terms of impact, I think just because the number of people using KiCad has grown so much over time, like the number of people who will be moving from version 5 to 6, I think is going to be lot higher than from 4 to 5 just because more and more people have started using KiCad. But I think if I had to sort of sum up where we are going with version 6, it's trying to work on smoothing over some of the rough edges that people complain about in KiCad and trying to, close the gaps between KiCad and some other tools that people might consider using. So make it relevant to more use cases and make it easier to get into KiCad from zero experience with electrical CAD or from experience with another tool. So we've just sort of looked at all of the ways in which people have pointed out KiCad is a little bit different, a little bit quirky compared to what they might be used to, and tried to address as many of those as we could. And also, you know, there's a long list of features that people have requested. You know, hey, CAD tool X can do this. Why can't KiCad do this? And so there's some juicy ones in there that we've managed to add for version 6. And we've got a long list ahead for version 7 and version 8 and on and on.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough when there are so many like different viewpoints, so much history in the industry, so many, I mean, like you said, different people using different programs that are like, oh, I really liked feature X or feature Y. And now those try to, you know, trying to kind of bolt these things on, but also make it feel like this whole thing that actually isn't just like menu after menu after menu after menu item, you know?
Right. And I think that's, you know, one of the challenges, you know, we were talking earlier about how, you know, KiCad has been around forever and can be kind of hard to get into as a developer if you aren't used to like these big legacy programs. One of the hardest things about achieving those goals in KiCad is just the legacy. Like, it's really easy to start from zero and develop, you know, a philosophy for the user experience and the UI of a program and then just stick to it. But when you have an existing program and you have, you know, identified faults with the UI, like this is obviously confusing to people, doesn't work as well as we want it to work. We have to also consider, but this is also how it works and how it has worked for decades. Right. And so not only do we have to design a good UI, but we have to design an experience that people can transition into who've already been using KiCad, because we don't want to just blow up what we have already and make everyone completely relearn something that feels foreign again. Mm-hmm. So we're also thinking about, you know, sometimes blowing parts of it up is the right move. And you know, one of the things that we've done is this, you know, the schematic editor, for example, the way that you interact with objects in the schematic, like selecting things and moving them around, was just very strange in previous versions of KiCad compared to what people are used to in most other editing tools. And there we felt like we could just change to the standard kind of paradigm that it's used in other tools. And yes, people who are very used to the old way would notice a change, but they would also probably be able to pick up that change pretty quickly, because it's the same paradigm that so many other pieces of software, including our own PCB editor, already use. Mm-hmm. And there are other cases where it's harder to figure out what the right move is, because we can look at other commercial CAD tools or other open source CAD tools. And sometimes we think, you know, no one's doing a great job here with this particular thing. Like, you know, CAD is not one of the places where you see a lot of, like, you know, award-winning user experience and things right, like yeah. that. Yeah. So
such a joy to use. So yeah, you know, it's yeah. like, oh, my iPad is just such a smooth experience, and no one's saying that about CAD programs, huh?
Yeah, and there are a few places where, you know, there's some of the commercial tools are really trying to push on user experience and have made some progress there. And I think we, you know, we keep looking at those and thinking about, you know, how does that map to something that we could realistically do in KiCad, and, you know, have a path for people to learn the new paradigm and, you know, implement it into the code that already exists.
That's cool. So you have a demo project we could maybe kind of use as like a basis for talking about stuff. Obviously, if people are just listening to this, there is a video version, so you can go and check that out. Otherwise, you can go and download version 5.99. There is a nightly available. You can try it out. I personally keep it on a VM. I think it's great for just keeping it kind of playgrounded myself. But it doesn't. You don't even need to do that. It's pretty easy to keep it separate in, you know, a Linux repo or as a separate Windows install, right?
Yeah, if you're using Linux or Windows, it's very easy to install both the nightly development version and the stable release on the same computer. And there's no problem with the programs fighting with each other like there was in the past. You just have to watch out for your design files. Once you open your design in the nightly, you can't go back to the old stable release. So mm-hmm. work on a backup copy.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Cool. So what are we going to be looking at here as a example?
Yeah. So what I have here is this project called Stick Hub, which is one of our new demo projects. This was contributed by a KiCad user, and it's a new demo for version 6 that shows off some of the new features like curved traces in the PCB. but I wanted to start by showing the schematic editor and just showing that now, you know, the biggest change is, like I said, how you interact with objects. So now you can just click on objects and they're selected. And if you haven't used KiCad before, this might seem a little bit obvious, but you know, KiCad didn't have this in the past. Like, there was no concept of just like having something selected. It was either not selected or you were already doing something with it. You were, you know, you select and move or select and rotate or something like that. But now, you know, you can drag
things
around.
Are you saying I have to have an extra click, John? Is that what I'm hearing? Oh my gosh, so many extra clicks.
Well, if you really want to use KiCad quickly, I would say that the thing to do is to learn the hotkeys. And that's something that we've maintained from the previous version. All of the things that you do with the mouse, you can also do often faster with the hotkeys. And so you can also just, you know, grab parts with a single key press and move them around. But we think
it took me far too long to realize that the old hotkey index, like the thing that showed like all of the hotkeys, it used to be on the question mark button. And now I think it actually is very smartly, I think control F1 or F1 is basically how you like have that show up. And that is how I learned the program to start with. I've always said that that's the best way to get started, just because you keep kind of getting that repetition in there. And now there's even a search function, which I don't think it had back in BZR 3104 or whatever it was.
I think you'll notice there's, you know, visually a lot of change here. We've completely redone our icon pack, and we did that for a couple of reasons. One was we needed to sort out some licensing issues with the old icons, where some of them we didn't really have clear records of the author and the license, and we needed to just make sure that we were starting from a position of having a good license on all the icons. But we also took that opportunity to develop an icon design language, and we worked with a graphic designer and sort of developed a set of colors and a set of design rules and things like that, so that not only do we have 500 icons that are all sort of designed the same way now, but we also have a guideline for developing new icons in the future as we develop new features, and hopefully can avoid some of the issues that we've seen in the past with KiCad and other open source projects, where the visual design language can be sort of all over the place with no guidelines for keeping things consistent. And one of the other things that's allowed, and I can't show it off here because I'm on Windows at the moment, which is the one platform where this doesn't work, but on Linux and Mac, we now have support for the operating system's dark mode, and so we can have a dark icon theme that for users who are using those operating systems.
Cool. Yeah, that's great. That's great. And I mean, so I think from a first glance, top line, the graphics, like your set of the icons, rather, that is different, but like it still looks like a schematic to me. I mean, like, it's not like so radically different that it's like, oh, I don't even know what program this is. Whereas, I look at an Altium schematic, I know it's an Altium schematic. I look at an Eagle schematic, I know it's an Eagle schematic. And so this still looks like KiCad to me, that it's still got that same look and feel and kind of color scheme, I guess.
Yeah. We wanted to maintain that KiCad feel and just make subtle improvements where we could. So the list of things that has changed here, I mean, it's going to take a while to compile. We're going to have to do that at one point, the release notes. There's just hundreds and hundreds of small improvements and big improvements in the schematic editor. One of the things is that, net classes can now be defined in the schematic. It used to be this was something that you would do in the PCB, but now you can say at schematic time, okay, here's some high speed nets, or here's some power nets, and set them up here. And you can actually give them different thicknesses and colors and line styles and things like that. So if you want all your power nets to be thicker than your signal nets, you can do that in the schematic and things like that.
That's great. That's great. Yeah, I think that's another thing too, where it's, for a long time, like the net classes was a scary thing that I told people like, oh, well, you don't really need to use it at all. But, as you start doing high speed stuff, you want to have controlled impedances. It just becomes so critical to just to keep things separate, especially as designs get more complex too, because you want to, you have so many different types of maybe controlled impedance lines or requirements for a specific output or spec.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the things that we've been doing, you know, both on the schematic side and on the PCB side, is trying to make KiCad more applicable to more types of designs. And that includes high-speed designs or high-power designs or any kind of situation where in previous versions of KiCad, it was really hard to sort of define the design rules and the requirements for your design, whether that's a lot of different impedance control requirements or current carrying capacity on traces or things like that. So one of the things I'll show later is we have, you know, a really big upgrade to the design rule system. And, you know, part of that is defining net classes, but part of that is also being able to, you know, set up custom rules for specific situations where, you know, previous versions of KiCad had sort of a one size fits all design rules that didn't really work for a lot of advanced PCBs.
Right. Yeah. If you have different, even different sections within a PCB, you might want to have the analog section have different rules than the digital section, that sort of thing.
Exactly. Yeah. So speaking of the PCB, I can pull one up here. There's perhaps a little bit more visually different on the PCB editor than on the schematic editor. Just at first glance, we've redone this right panel here where you choose what things are visible and there's now a list of nets and net classes here, so you can actually scroll through nets here and turn them on and off and hide the rat's nest lines, which can really help on busy boards. But we also have these presets for displays, and you can add your own custom presets. So this just makes working with busy designs even better, because you can now use this control tab hotkey to just cycle through different presets of layers. So if there's inner layers, there's none on this design, or I can just say, I only want front layers, or maybe I only want back layers. And if there's a particular set of layers for your design that matters to you, like maybe you want to set up a specific view for routing certain traces against reference planes, you can save that preset and you can pull that up in the list in addition to the built-in ones. And we've also made it so that you can change the transparency of different types of objects. So you can see here, I can make the filled areas in these zones translucent and keep the tracks fully opaque. And there's a lot of little tweaks like this that we've done to make busier boards easier to navigate in the PCB, and generally just trying to make KiCad an easier place to be if you're dealing with a complex design.
Yeah, that's one of the things where, like, it, especially for beginners, it feels like it's so much information that you're trying to kind of parse. You know, say you have an 8-layer board and you're trying to see all these things at once, right? You're peering through different layers, you're having different cutouts. It can be really confusing, especially if you start getting into really crazy things like blind and buried vias and just trying to visualize that stuff. So this is very much appreciated.
Yeah, and another thing is, in previous versions of KiCad, you could go into what was called high contrast mode and sort of make things fade out. And this is nice for some situations, but still, you know, especially when you're talking about like an 8-layer board or something like that, even the faded out stuff can still be distracting. And so you can now, you know, hit that hotkey one more time, and now you're only looking at one layer at a time. And you can still, you know, quickly toggle through which layer you're looking at. And with a single hotkey, get back to showing more of the context. You know, previously you had to go over here and, you know, hit a bunch of checkboxes and turn layers on and off. So now it's a lot easier to navigate those kind of boards.
Yeah. Yeah, it is usability. That's really great. That's awesome. And I think that, you know, like I said, you know, like some of the mental just viewing of this stuff is, it's going to be a skill regardless, right? Some people watching this are very likely beginners or interested in PCB layout. You know, some of it is just going to be learning some of these methodologies, some of the conventions that are part of ECAD programs, it feels like. So what is the split of like beginner versus, you know, more advanced type stuff? It seems like this is maybe skewing more towards the advanced.
That's a good question. I wish I knew. I mean, we don't have very good statistics on the whole user base. I mean, we don't collect a lot of information, you know, from every KiCad user. I mean, we've done some surveys in the past to, you know, places like the KiCad user forum, but that's only going to capture, you know, a certain subset of the people who actually use KiCad. So we can find out about those users, and we can sort of find out, you know, users who report bugs to us. Sometimes you can tell what kind of work they're doing, if, you know, depending on how much information they share with us. But I think what we've seen is, KiCad has always been recommended to beginners, to hobbyists, to students, to, you know, anyone who needs a good tool that is also, you know, free of charge, where, you know, they can't you know, justify paying for a tool. And, you know, until fairly recently, there weren't a lot of good options other than KiCad that could both do, you know, a wide variety of tasks in electronics design and were free of charge. And we've also seen recently a lot more users who, you know, they don't care as much about the free of charge part. They care about other things that might, you know, be either pushing them towards an open source tool or pushing them away from, you know, whatever commercial tool they have been using. And one thing that's been big is sort of control over data and control over licensing. You know, a lot of companies these days are looking at how they can move away from perpetual licenses to subscription licenses for all software. Obviously, you know, from a you know, business point of view, subscriptions are pretty attractive. You know, they sort of guarantee recurring revenue, but it does create a lot of, you know, unease with the designer community. I've seen where people are worried about losing access to their designs, things like that. So one thing that KiCad offers is there's no way you're ever going to lose access to your design. And, you know, even if you, you know, if you decide that you want to operate with a certain KiCad version, you're never going to be forced to upgrade to the new version if you don't want to. And so I think there's been, you know, for those kind of reasons and for other reasons, we've seen, you know, more professional users come to KiCad in the past years.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like what you were talking about with people, you know, gently guiding people towards these new features, these new locations of just maybe where to click and where to, you know, just people's workflow. And it's like with some of the cloud tools, even when they are updating for a arguably, objectively better flow or way of doing things, it's just like you're blowing up someone's workflow on a daily basis now, instead of like this opt-in, like, oh yeah, I'm ready to move to the next version. And like, I'm ready to like sit down and make sure that I'm good to go. And it's not the day before my board's due. And yeah, so there is a lot of that pushback. And then like you had also said, like, it seems like the ecosystem kind of the ecosystem stuff has, maybe that's a softer one, I'm not sure. Like, I personally feel like so much of the, you know, there's the core developers, but then even like the bomb plugins and things like that, that a lot of the KiCad community has pushed back in. Like, it, that is so valuable to me that I can just find something. There's people out there that are doing Python scripting or doing other stuff out there that when I'm in a bind, I can just kind of Google around and find something.
Absolutely. I think, you know, the KiCad community is definitely its biggest asset, and just, it's incredibly motivating to me and the other developers to see the people who are not only using KiCad and showing off like the boards they make with it, but also, you know, contributing library parts, contributing Python scripts and things like that. It's definitely, when you compare to some of the other options of even, you know, commercial software might be very capable, but if you try to find support from the community, you know, it might be kind of hard to find. Like, there's not just a, you know, a user base of people who will, you know, chat with you in real time and try to help resolve your issues. And, you know, I think one of the other things that is kind of paradoxical about you know, the nightly builds of KiCad, and like you said, the people who are, you know, enthusiastically testing that and sort of living on the danger zone of running into bugs. You know, we really appreciate the people who are doing that, and they are providing a really invaluable service, because, you know, whenever we have a, you know, a serious kind of bug that, you know, misses the development team, we find out about it from those users really quickly. Like, we have people reporting stuff and, you know, within hours. And this really allows us to, you know, focus in on those critical things and get them fixed quickly. And I think one of the things I've heard from people in the community is that they really appreciate how quickly KiCad fixes serious problems. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, there might be, you know, people might wish for a certain feature and it might be a complicated feature. And yeah, those can take years to figure out how to do. But there's some bug that's crashing KiCad, like we want it fixed today. And, you know, if we can't fix it today, it's because it's a hard problem and we're still working on it. And not because we don't prioritize it. Whereas I've seen some complaints about various other tools out there, you know, open source or commercial, where, you know, serious crash problems can stick around for way longer than people expect.
Right. Yeah. And then it's, again, it's like a business thing of like, what is the cost of your business being down for days at a time or weeks at a time? And, you know, if you can't pay someone to fix it, even it's like, oh my gosh, okay, well, good luck. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and speaking of that, it's, you know, it's really exciting now, like that if people don't know, we now have, some of our developers have started a company, the KiCad Surfaces company, where they offer paid support and paid development. And I think it's great to have both, you know, the volunteer developers like myself who are working on, you know, what we feel like working on and contributing when we can, and then also have the option of, you know, oh, say you want to pay for this thing because, you know, you feel like it's not getting prioritized by the, you know, the volunteers like me, you can do that now. And I think it's going to be really great for the project to have that as an option for, you know, supporting professional users who, you know, like you said, you know, if something's broken for them, it really matters how quickly it gets fixed.
Yeah, I'm still a little disappointed they didn't go with the name Lead Hat instead of Red Hat, but they that's okay. I guess, KiCad Professional Services is also good, you know, but whatever.
Well, you'll have to complain to Seth about his lack of humor in his name.
Yeah. Speaking of Seth, and so I actually texted him in preparation for having this recording, and I wanted to verify because Seth will be hosting KiCon 2021, which is a go. And so that is happening in 2021.
Oh, that's great to hear.
Yeah, so more to come on that. That'll be in October of 2021 in the newly opened California as of today's recording. So that's very exciting. And we might get to all hang out and talk about our favorite CAD program in person, which would be very, very awesome after a year and a half of not being able to do that and missing out on going to CERN.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well. Well, maybe next year. But that's great to hear. I know Seth's been working in the background for a while to make that happen. It's really good to hear that it's going to happen. And, you know, yes, there's going to be a lot of caveats to having that kind of event this year. Yeah. But, you know, we're doing what we can. And like you said, you know, after a year and a half, it's going to be really good. I really enjoyed the last KiCon, so I'm really looking forward to this.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. So if we can get back to the some of the features. So you mentioned the DRC stuff, and I feel like that's one of the ones where it's this hard thing to explain to people, especially people that are getting started, right? Some of the people listening are getting started here. What is DRC? Why does it matter? And then how is it changing in this case? Because it feels like that's kind of a game changer, it feels like to me. And it also feels like it's like kind of this background feature otherwise. You know, it's not something that's visual. It's something that's more rules-based.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so DRC or design rules in general is how you tell KiCad or any electrical CAD tool what the requirements of your design are when you're laying out a PCB. So those requirements might come from different places. Like a lot of them come from the manufacturer of your board. You know, you might know I'm going to send this board to Oshpark or whoever your manufacturer is, and they will have certain equipment that's actually going to, you know, set up your board and expose all the copper and mill it out. And all of those steps in the manufacturing process have tolerances. And so you need to allow for those tolerances. And so one part of design rules is making sure that you don't accidentally design something in CAD that can't be built in the real world. Like, you know, lines are just too close together. They're actually going to short out if you try to manufacture that in the real world or things like that.
Yeah, it's like bumper bowling for PCBs, right? You'd make sure you can't go in the gutter.
Yeah. And so, you know, making sure that your board can actually be made is part of it. And another part of it is making sure your board works properly, even if the manufacturer can make it. You know, all of the copper on a board has certain electrical properties, and those electrical properties, you know, matter in different situations. Like if you're trying to, you know, power some kind of high power device off of your PCB, you know, all of that current for that device has to go through traces on your PCB. And so you want to make sure that the resistance of those traces is going to be low enough that the copper in the board doesn't actually, you know, heat itself up to the point that it fails. And there's a bunch of other stuff like that. When you get into a higher speed design, you have to start thinking about signal integrity. And if you're trying to make a product and release it, you have to worry about EMC and whether your board is going to be unintentionally radiating noise into the world and things like that. How you lay out the board and, you know, exactly where you put different pieces of copper matters a lot to the success of your board, especially when you get into, you know, higher end layouts, when you're talking about you know, sensitive analog circuits or high speed digital circuits or things like that. And what design rules does is it allows you to sort of offload some of that thinking to the computer. Definitely not all of that thinking. Like, you definitely still have to think for yourself a little bit, but you can at least tell the computer some of the things about what will make your circuit work, or what your circuit needs in terms of the physical copper on the board. And then as you're designing the board, the design rule checker can in some cases just prevent you from doing things that are going to violate those rules, and in other cases, you know, notify you later if you accidentally violated any of those rules and give you an opportunity to fix it. So when we talk about design rule checking, you know, that's what we're talking about, is it's only as good as the rules you put into it. So if you configure your rules correctly, it will tell you if your design meets those rules. But unfortunately, it can't tell you if those rules are the right rules to make your product successful. Right. But right. You know, it can help with part of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that was one of the things that kind of brought me to the program in the first place, was I had been coming from Eagle, where you could lay a line over top of line over top of line. And at the end, yeah, it tells you, oh yeah, actually you busted that. You can't put two lines, you can't cross the streams. But, you know, in KiCad, you could bounces off of things because, yeah, the live DRC is there and it's preventing you from doing the things you shouldn't be doing. And like you said, you can always go back and mess something up later. And so you still have to do that final check. But the idea that you're checking it as I go, that's very important, because I my brain loves making mistakes like that, I think.
Yeah. And that's one of the biggest engineering challenges in bringing the new DRC system to KiCad, is that it's not just a final check at the end. It happens in real time as you're drawing traces with the router. Mm-hmm. So now that the new system allows you to have a different clearance in one part of the board than the other, and all kinds of things like that that people have been asking for, we had to make all of that work in real time. So
it stacks up, right? I mean, there's a lot of math there. So on the ABC board, which is one of the boards that I designed for the Contextual Electronics course, I have a bunch of parallel lines there, and it was getting real tight. And, you know, so as I started to push things together, there's shifting that happens around with a push and shove router that came out in V5, which was a great feature that people, V4 maybe even, whatever it was, you know, people loved it. I love it. It's amazing. But as it's pushing, as it's, you know, one trace runs into another and it moves something else, it has to calculate, like, hey, can I move? Do I have any room to move? And as you have multiple lines stacking up, it becomes difficult. And now the rules might be different from line one to line two to line three. And it's just
exactly,
it's a lot of math. I've always been surprised about how much math is in there.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that what you're talking about, like, you know, shoving 10 lines around a board is something that, you know, we've gotten real test cases from some commercial users of KiCad who are, you know, designing products, and they have, you know, shared their designs with us privately because they're interested in helping make KiCad work better on these large designs. And it's been very helpful to have these enormous boards that, you know, you just don't see these on the open source hardware sites, like, you know,
right.
You know,
a little different than an Atmega 328P, you know, with just routing out to headers. It's like, okay, well, that's one thing, but there's also, you know, 1200 pin BGAs that are doing their own thing, right? It's like,
exactly, you know, huge BGAs, you know, 16 plus layers, things like that. And And we have really spent a lot of time trying to make sure that as we're adding these DRC features, that we're not, you know, compromising the speed of using KiCad and creating huge lag. And I think, you know, we've done a pretty good job. There's definitely still room for improvement there. But I'm actually quite impressed with how KiCad is able to handle large designs in the nightly builds today, you know, compared to some other software I've used.
Yeah. Can you show a little bit of what the DRC looks like? Because it is more kind of scripty now, right?
The new version? So there's two options. So when I open up the board setup here, there's two places where you can set the design rules. And part of them is this this page called Constraints. And this is fairly similar to what was in previous versions of KiCad. There's some new stuff here, but overall, what this page does is it lets you set constraints that apply everywhere to the whole board. So, you know, if you get word from your manufacturer, like everywhere on this board, you know, I need to have minimum clearance of, you know, 0.15 millimeters, you can put that in there. And then, you know, no matter what else you do, this will always be the absolute minimum clearance. And so then there's actually three places, because you can come in and define net classes. And this allows you to say, you know, I have this set of nets, like these are all my power nets and they all need to carry more current. So I want to make sure that my tracks in the power net class are a little bit bigger. So you can set that up here. And then the new part is what's called custom rules. And like Chris was saying, this is a more of a scripting way of defining design rules. And, you know, I could talk for a while about this, but basically the really short description of how this works is you figure out where you want the rule to apply and where could be like a physical region. Like, I want this rule to apply, you know, in this little corner of the board, or it could be, a matter of the properties of the objects. Like, when net A runs up against net B, I want this rule to apply. So you know, whatever your condition is, you're going to have a way of defining that condition by writing some kind of expression. And we have a help system that explains all of the different things that you can write in here, and a lot of different examples for common use cases that have come up from our beta testers who have been using this in the nightly builds to design real boards. So once you define where the rule applies, then you just define, you know, what the rule is. Like, you know, this rule is giving a minimum copper clearance, but you can also, you know, have a lot of different rule types. Like, you can, you know, control how wide a track is, or you can control how close together two footprints can be. You can control differential pairs and net length and things like that. So we know that this is in its early stages. I mean, this has been a pretty complicated system to build. And we know, you know, some people would prefer to have some kind of like a wizard system to define rules, which are more graphical and less sort of programmy. And where we've decided to go with this is to do the sort of the architecture first. And this scripting system that gives you all the control. And now that this exists, it's actually pretty easy to think about building a UI that sort of automatically creates rules for you based on some kind of a wizard. And so we expect to see people building that in the community via Python plugins and things like that. And we'll also consider, you know, in future versions of KiCad, adding more UI here. You know, one of the things we're thinking about is we can make this text editor better. Like, if you've used a modern programmer's text editor, they can do things like, you know, auto-complete entire sentences for you in your programming language of choice. And we could do that kind of thing here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like automatic lookup, and so that it's like, oh, here are the nets that are available to assign to this sort
exactly.
of action.
And we have a little bit of that already. Like, you know, if we have we have some amount of auto-complete for things. But I think that's definitely an area where we think that this is kind of a new approach to doing design rules. It's not something we see out there in other tools. And it's always a risk doing something like that. You know, we definitely talked about the various ways that we could answer people's desire for more flexible design rules. And what we concluded is that we weren't really happy with any of the implementations that we were looking at as like the nice solution to the problem. And we've been trying to care about user experience and trying to make a nice solution. And we think that starting here is actually going to lead to a nicer place in the end than just jumping into, you know, one way we could have gone is just having a ton of different UIs for setting up, you know, I want a rule in this area or something like this. But, you know, one fact is it would have just taken forever, and we might, you know, we might not have nearly as many new design rules as we do if we had to build a separate UI for defining each one.
Yeah. What's also interesting is that, I mean, it does feel like there's more software people that are interested in hardware coming into the space anyway. So it does feel like for the people that are kind of software wizards, they can just kind of pick this up and go, maybe script it, like you said. How has that been impacting other parts of the program? And I mean, is this even a trend you're seeing?
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things that we're working on in the background that's not quite ready for the public yet, but will be by the time version 6 is ready, is a new Python API that will make it easier for people in the community, individuals or companies to develop add-ons for KiCad that make it do things that it can't today. And we've definitely seen, you know, there are a lot of people out there who are KiCad users and, you know, don't want to dive into the, you know, admittedly complex and storied C++ code base of KiCad.
Oh, you're a politician now as well.
you know, they can write a little Python script. You know, I think, you know, what I've seen, you know, in my professional life is for hardware engineers, knowing software development, or at least knowing, you know, some kinds of software development, like, you know, quickly developing a Python script or something like that is more and more important. I think, you know, the days of, you know, someone, you know, being in the professional world and laying out complicated PCBs and just like not knowing any programming at all are numbered, I think. So we've seen more and more people who would be comfortable doing this kind of basic programming and we want to empower that. So we're definitely, like I said, working on a new and improved Python API that makes it easier to and makes it possible to automate more tasks in KiCad and make it easier for people to discover those things that other people have made sort of plugins to KiCad so that we want to see that community grow and thrive.
Yeah, that's one thing I'm actually excited about as an external. I'm not much of a scripter myself, but like seeing people do things like, you know, wanting to like set up automated builds and similar things using APIs, that kind of stuff is really useful, and it makes for consistency. Whereas, you know, certain things in graphical, you know, tools like this, it's just tough to make consistent, right? You always have to click the same thing in the same order or do the same thing the same way each time, and it's kind of down to personal rigor instead of like a computer doing it for you. And now it's like, oh yeah, okay, so now if you start being able to script this, you can make it so it's one click button, maybe all the stuff gets exported at once, or one click button and all of the LEDs get put into a circular ring, or, you know, and on and on and on and on. There's lots of ways that the scripting can be used. So that's do you have a good like example project that you think is like a good way to get started with scripting inside of the CAD program?
I think placing, you know, LEDs, like you said, is a great example. Like, you know, something where you want to do something a little bit tedious, like if you are, you know, say you're designing your own keyboard or something like that, where you have you know, a bunch of switches to place, a bunch of LEDs to place, something like that. If you can figure out you know, a simple way to describe in Python code, you know, where the center of each part should be, then that's a pretty easy script to write. And I've seen a lot of those out there, and they tend to be pretty specific to the application. So if you have a specific application for, you know, placing parts precisely, I think that's a great place to start in terms of seeing how scripting can help your workflow. Mm-hmm. And in general, I think, you know, this is the thing that I'm really excited about for, you know, one of the things I'm really excited about the new Python API enabling is there are so many different little use cases for KiCad that people have that, you know, they're the only person who needs it to do exactly what they need it to do. And when the development team is, you know, looking at feedback coming in of like, I wish KiCad could do this, or I wish it would do this differently, or things like that, we sort of have to apply an averaging. Like, we can't add everyone's specific request in the specific way they want all the time, especially when, you know, people are requesting things that are in conflict with each other. And one of the, you know, we can take the approach of seeing, okay, most people want this, or it seems like, you know, for the 80% of people, this is going to be the right solution, and add that into the main KiCad code base. But, you know, we still appreciate that there's then 20% of people that's not quite right for them. And we can't, you know, we don't want to take the approach of adding like 5,000 options to every single feature in KiCad so that everyone's particular style is accommodated everywhere. You know, there's certainly places where we want more flexibility in KiCad, and we'll look at adding it. But there will always be a point at which we say, you know, this request is a little bit too specific. It's a little bit too out of the ordinary. And there's a cost to adding that to the main KiCad code base. I mean, it, you know, then becomes something we have to maintain and test and document and all of that stuff.
And it becomes confusing for new users too. They're like, well, why
exactly.
Do I need this
yeah.
feature?
They're overwhelmed. You know, which one do I pick? Things like that. You know, where we can, the best option is no option when that works out. Like, there's a lot of caveats to that, you know, catchphrase where, you know, you certainly need configurability in a lot of spaces. But I think, you know, if there's a 99% versus 1% kind of use case, we would prefer to not have that extra checkbox there. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that the scripting lets you do is serve the 1%. Like, you know, you can, if you find that you're in the minority in your opinion of how something should work, we want to enable you to make KiCad work that way anyway by implementing it as a Python plugin. And so we really look forward to, you know, making it easier to develop and publish Python plugins so that, you know, more people can do that.
Yeah. Can you show just how is the console still there in V6? Like, can you show what that looks like to just kind of roll up a quick script? Not that you have to like do one, but is the location of scripting the same?
Yeah. So there's this icon up here. It looks like a console, and this opens a Python shell inside of KiCad. And you know, you can directly start live coding here, and people use this in a couple of different ways. One, you can use it to help develop a plugin. Like, you can try things out and see what they do. It has an autocomplete, so you can sort of see, okay, these are all the functions that are available and the API and things like that. But you can also use it to just directly manipulate the board that's open. Like, if you have some function that is just a few lines of Python, you can actually just run it directly here instead of going through the trouble of, you know, creating a plugin and all of that extra stuff.
Got it. Yeah, that's super cool. And I mean, that's honestly, that's not something how I work normally, but it's like, that does seem like that would be such a enhancer of time. And like you said, anything repeatable, LED panels, Those are the bane of my existence, of just like making sure those are placed right and stuff too. So yeah, it's great.
Yeah. I've seen some great things where people want to lay out LEDs on a curve or on a spiral or something like that, where, you know, the points on a spiral are pretty easy to describe in math, but pretty tedious to do by hand. So that's a great example.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool. So what are some of the things you're excited about in V6?
Well, apart from, you know, the stuff we've already talked about, I think that I'm pretty excited about the workflow improvements to the PCB layout and to the schematic editor. Like, there's just too much to cover here, but some of the things that we've done in the schematic make it a lot easier to build complex designs. Like, we've overhauled how buses work and how they pass signals between different sheets, and so if you're dealing with a large design that has a lot of different sub-circuits, it's a lot easier to do now. And we've just looked at, like, almost every different part of laying out the PCB, you know, the workflow that you go through, and tried to make it as efficient as we can, like cut out unnecessary steps, make the tools work in a more consistent way, and make the tools smarter, like, you know, making the router do, do things that you might expect instead of things that you might not expect. Like some people who have used the KiCad router in the past have complained that it was sort of hard to get the results they wanted. And we've taken a look at some of those problems and tried to fix them. So generally I would say, version 6 gets out of your way and helps you a lot more than previous versions of KiCad did. And I am really excited to, you know, start doing more designs with that. I've been doing, you know, a few simple designs off and on, but I'm excited for KiCad 6 to be out and to see people doing more complicated designs with it, and really to spend some time watching people using it and seeing, you know, how well we've done on improving the things that we tried from version 5, and also, you know, double checking our idea of, you know, what should we work on next, what should go into version 7.
Yeah, that's always a tough thing. It's, you know, there's only so many hours in the day and so many developers on the project. So yeah, you gotta try and get that 80% of what's going to be valuable. So it's a tough role. Basically, you have to be like a product manager as well as the person writing the code.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's a big part of, you know, being on the lead development team. It's not just writing code; it's figuring out what code to write. Often takes more time, actually.
Yeah, and I mean, so now taking off your KiCad hat and putting on your EE hat, I mean, what do you see in terms of like people using this in the workplace? You've kind of already talked about it as a professional tool. You're seeing more people doing it. What do you think is going to take until, you know, like market adoption, more people using it on a regular basis? I mean, like I use it professionally, but I'm, you know, a one person company versus like a, you know, maybe an 8-person company like yours, or 100-person company, or 1,000, you know, like 1,000 EEs, that would be a lot of opinions, but, you know, like larger style companies as well.
Yeah. So I sort of think there's two categories of things that keep people off of KiCad who might use KiCad or might want to use KiCad. And one of them is sort of easier to figure out, which is, you know, missing features. Like, even though we've done a lot of work for version 6 to add new features that people have been asking for, there is still, you know, a set of features, especially for advanced PCBs, where KiCad just really doesn't compare yet to some of the commercial tools out there. When people are designing complex stackups like are needed for rigid flex boards or sort of high-end RF work, things like that, it can, you know, be, you can certainly do that in KiCad. Like nothing is going to stop you from doing it, but the productivity tools that are offered in some of the other commercial EDA suites are just not there yet for those high-end use cases. And so I think that's going to keep some groups off of KiCad. But I think the one that's maybe affecting more, I don't know, this is just a guess, you know, and it certainly applies to me personally, is just productivity in teams. You know, I think the way KiCad has developed over time has been, you know, more focused on the individual user than on a team of users. And there's nothing specifically that prevents a team of users from using KiCad, but it's, you know, the same with the advanced board layout techniques. The commercial tools just make it a little bit more painless in some ways when it comes to, you know, collaborating on designs, especially collaborating on libraries and sort of central library management and things like that. I think this is something where KiCad certainly has room to grow. And I think when people look at what would be involved in migrating to KiCad, I think that the collaboration workflow and the sort of the centralized management of assets like footprints and symbols and things like that is sometimes a sticking point. Maybe not always because KiCad can't do something, but just because the way KiCad would want you to do something is so different from what people are used to in the commercial software that it just sort of you know, makes them a little bit concerned about whether or not it's going to work out. So that's what's on my mind in that regard. I mean, it's certainly something that I think about a lot. And, you know, if I think about what's coming up for version 7, I can relate a lot of things that are on the to-do list back to those two sort of sets of things.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really interesting just kind of thinking about that as like, you know, it doesn't have to be all one type. You know, there's going to be many different ways to do a thing. And, you know, might be this program, might be another. But just kind of being curious about that, because there are some top level companies and programs that you see a lot of people using, you know, and what it's going to take to get more people to migrate to KiCad. It's interesting just seeing how that goes. So yeah, it's an exciting future all the same, and I'm really glad that people like you are working on it. Where can people find out more about what you're doing, both, you know, in your day job and your professional life, and then also for the project and for KiCad and, you know, the community and writing code and stuff?
Yeah, well, I hang out in a variety of different places online. I often tweet about KiCad when there's cool new features, yeah, that especially when I can show a little video of something. I'm at John Crafty John on Twitter. And I hang out on the KiCad Discord and a couple of other electrical engineering Discords. And I find, you know, that's been a great way to, you know, find out more about KiCad users and even, you know, watch some live streams of people using KiCad, which has been incredibly useful from a product management point of view. Mm-hmm. And I also hang out on the KiCad user forum and of course all over the KiCad GitLab where people engage with us asking for features and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, that's a good way to start an engagement, but then you might also get a pull request welcome. That's always the isn't that a fun response? It's like, yeah, come on in, the water's fine, try and change a color, you can do it. Mm-hmm. Folks, you can try it out. Well, John, I hope you and I can be clinking glasses soon at KiCon 2021 and
absolutely
talking more about this stuff. I'm really excited for all the things that are to come and all the work you're doing. So thank you for doing that.
Well, thank you, Chris. And I'm looking forward to KiCon as well.
All right. So that was our episode with John Evans, one of the lead developers for KiCad or KiCad. And you should definitely go check out V6. You can go and do that in a VM. You can download it. You can just download it directly and run the nightly. Specifically, it's usually a separate install, so that's really helpful, like John talked about. I think it's really worthwhile to go and see what's coming. There, of course, are always going to be some things that are maybe a little bit rough around the edges still before we get the stable release out there. But you can also go and help out. You can file bugs. You can help with documentation. You can dive in and become part of this project that is an ever-growing project. There's also the forum.kiCad.info. If you haven't seen that, that's a great resource. A lot of helpful people over there. And John is one of the founding people on the Discord channel. John's always on the KiCad Discord channel, helping people out, giving feedback, working people through their problems. And so I will link that down below as well. I'm really appreciative to John and the entire KiCad team. We did a talk a little bit earlier. I guess it was 2020. We did a talk with all of them. It's really worthwhile to check out where they are thinking about going with the program. John obviously talked about a lot of that, but I think it's just an exciting time to be in this part of the electronics industry. More and more open source tools that are enabling people like myself, like all of you, and allowing you to jump in and participate in that way. So please consider jumping in, participating, donating, anything you can do to further the cause of KiCad. You know that I'm going to like it around here, and I think it'll benefit you as well. That's all for now. Thanks for watching. Thanks for sharing these episodes on social media, and we'll see you in the next episode.